Yeah, frat gear is good as own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
And then they trash him and say he's a fucking pill-popping, you know, pothead or whatever when he left.
Fuck you, Daddy.
I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Take the keys to my truck. Hit the shop cause I'm faded. Honey's in the streets, say money, yo, we made it. It feels so good in my hood tonight. The summertime skirts and my guys ain't canine. All my gangbangers forgot about the drive-by. You gotta get your groove on before you go get paid. So tip up your cup and throw your hands up and let me hit a party.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and we have a little do-si-do scoop-de-roo here, as my PIC would say. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
You mean dipsy-doo-dunkaroo?
No, I like scoop-a-roo better.
Scoop-a-scoop-a-roo? Scooping-la-roo?
Scoop-a-scoop-a-roo.
That's a big scoop. JR, it's always scoop-a-roo. A pleasure to talk to you. Welcome, everyone, to episode 166 of the Place to Be podcast. 34 away.
Yes. Closing in. And then we're retiring for good. So.
Yes, that's done.
Yes, like a little bit.
Like Barry Sanders. We start quick and end quick.
Maybe you do. So anyway, we go a little bit of a change here for tonight, P2B Nation. We reached out to Kevin Kelly. He had to reschedule a last-minute commitment. He will join us now next Wednesday night. And tonight, instead, we will be doing Bad Blood in your house here. So let's get to it, Scotty.
All right. Well, he's really going to freak out because he didn't think we were going to be in here tonight. So.
Well, he may have been manicuring or manscaping or God knows what he was doing.
He's probably his takeout from the Sizzler. All right.
What's he doing with the takeout from the Sizzler?
He's noshing on the takeout from the Sizzler.
Oh, I thought he was manscaping with it.
Making
hey, what is going on here?
Jesus, that is the biggest turkey carcass I've ever seen.
Yes.
Get out of here.
This side of Bastion Booger.
Exactly. All right. And you're like, this is an emotional roller coaster for you. You weren't expecting this tonight, so you're a little...
I'm all thrown off.
All frazzled.
Yeah, I got to get it together.
All right. Tonight, on the Place to Be podcast, inside the Vintage Vault, the showstopper delivers, but my PIC is sad.
Very sad. And this was a tough show to get through, but you know, one you have to get through because it is pretty historical from a few points of view. Yes. I remember watching this one. I was with Andy, and I think Josh was over as well, and my brother was over for the beginning. I remember that, and because I remember when the big news broke, it was quite the shock. So,
okay, all right. Of course, just to get it official tonight on the Place to Be podcast, in your house, Bad Blood. A title that they would use tonight, but would not use again for almost 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's dive in. October 5th, 1997, live from the Kiel Center in St. Louis, Missouri. I know this is a very old place, so...
Incorrect. It actually opened in 1994.
Oh, really?
To replace the Kiel Auditorium.
Oh, okay. There we go.
That was torn down in 1992. So.
Okay, so it was different buildings. I thought they just changed the name. Okay.
Yep. For wrestling, it holds 21-151, home to, of course, the St. Louis Blues, the University of St. Louis Billikens that were there till 2008. St. Louis Steamers, the MISL, the St. Louis Ambush of the NPSL. I think it was the Cleveland Steamers. The St. Louis Stampede of the AFL, the St. Louis Vipers of the RHI, the River City Rage of the NIFL, the Missouri Valley Conference Men's Basketball Tournament, and, of course, the home of the one and only Jeremy Nichols.
That is correct. Speaking of the attendance, it was a sellout, 21,151. That's a great card. That's a great crowd for a secondary show in 97. Are you getting the feeling now that the crowd is starting to
yes
starting to buy it now? You know, the WWF audience is starting to figure it out now. So now you're going
right,
to see.
So sell out. I mean, not only that, St. Louis a wrestling hotbed as well.
Yes.
So.
Yep, absolutely. Buy rate 0.6, which actually isn't that bad for these secondary shows. Your announcers, the Triduum, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, good old JR, Jim Ross, and of course the King Jerry Lawler. And yes, my PIC, we have finally reached it. This is officially VKM's final pay-per-view.
Pretty crazy. Been such the voice of these pay-per-views for so long now.
Yeah.
Odd to see him go, and you know, obviously he's not going to leave TV in any way. Well,
no.
To be around.
No.
He yeah, kind of sad. You know, I miss Vince. Vince was the voice for me growing up. As much as Gorilla was, but Vince was really my, you know, Gorilla was my young years, but Vince was my formative wrestling years. He was the
yes.
voice I knew perhaps the most as a commentator. So,
right. So, there you go. No free-for-all, or if there was, there were no matches on the free-for-all. Follow along with us, by the way, bigelow34.proboards.com, and follow. I know you're emotional too. Jesus, I got him. I got you. God,
crazy night. It's a wild night.
Emotional tonight. Everybody's voices are cracking. Everybody's so sad. It's okay, and it's okay. We'll get through it. Mm. We'll get through it together. God knows. In terms of sadness, we got another show. Talk mm-hmm. about emotion.
Yeah, way too much
big,
going on. Here.
A big two show stretch coming up here. So, all right, let's get to our opener.
Okay.
You a little verklempt?
Yeah, I'm right.
Let's get to our opener. We have the Nation of Domination, or three quarters of them, if you will.
Yes.
Kama Bin Mustafa. I don't know if the bin was the bin still there? I
guess always there. The bin is always there.
Okay. And I was saying there. To you, Jay, been there. I was you and I were talking on Monday night when we were doing the Garden Raw that he was in good shape. Usually after a while he just was big, but here I think he was like
yes.
legitimately in good
oh,
shape.
Oh yeah, he was jacked up.
D'Lo Brown, the
his pay-per-view debut.
The accountant, yes, D'Lo Brown,
in a match.
Rocky Maivia. Mm-hmm. So technically, you're right. I don't think he's officially taken his other moniker yet, which we won't talk about.
Right now, I think it's towards the end of the year when he starts doing some more promos and stuff. But
yes, it is a 3-on-2 handicap.
I've been watching you for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man can need and never has wanted. This is love.
The first line still sounds like I met you up at Rutgers. Oh God, I was not in favor of this. I didn't like them not having a disadvantage. I was very upset.
Well, supposed to of course be Ken Shamrock, but he was injured during the IC title tournament and he's still out with the internal injuries, so
so they don't get a, you know, here's an interesting thing. Obviously it's mostly for storyline purposes, but logically you have to say this. How come every time there's a storyline handicap match, it's because a guy is injured, but it's an injury. It's not like the guy walked out or whatever. How come they're never allowed to get a replacement? Too bad he's hurt. Screw you. You're stuck.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't give him a replacement here. It is kind of weird. And I don't know who they could have dug up to make it fit, but I guess someone. They could have worked someone in here. But
yeah. Of course, we're talking about Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom. These three guys, or most of the guys, well, no, nobody in this match actually LOD faced at WrestleMania. It's a completely different cachet of Legion of Doom guys, Nation of Domination guys that they faced in Chicago in March. A different group of guys.
Yeah, a few still kind of going, and we saw this build on that MSG Raw where LOD was involved in a brawl with the Nation, so I guess they could have, was out with the injury to the hand? They could have, I'm sure that he could have stood on the apron and, you know, hit a couple moves.
Yeah,
could have had his hand taped. I wonder why they didn't stick him in here.
Yeah, I'm sure his hand would have fallen off most likely, or would have hurt his other hand or something. Rocky, his first official pay-per-view match as a heel. However, still kind of wrestling that strange defensive-ish comeback kind of face way of wrestling. He still hasn't really adapted a heel tempo style yet. It would take him a few months before he got into that mode. You know, a lot of posturing. You know, he was very, obviously he cut his teeth in Memphis, so he understands the Lawler way of thinking, you know, walking around jaw jacking with the St. Louis fans and all that kind of jazz and you know, kind of posturing and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of moving around and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, I kind of put my foot in my mouth at Ground Zero saying, you know, one of the greatest, they're putting on some awesome matches. But this one, this is where you, this is where I finally had to concede the fact that they're just not the same team they were. Moving so much slower now.
Yeah.
Look, I'm sad, but I'm not sad. I mean, obviously, you know, they've been in business for 15 years. You know, they're taking God knows how much stuff in their body. So, Hawk in particular. You know, so they're not the same team. I get that. I'm half kidding when I say things like that. But the reality is yeah, they're breaking down. They're getting older, and they're just not. And particularly against a team like this, where you kind of need to help them along a little bit. They can only do so much. So it wasn't a horrendous match. But if you were expecting a lot of, you know, crazy brawling, super fast pace, you weren't getting
it. No, not at all. And, yeah, like you said, this is a slow opener. The crowd is into it. You know, say what you want about the Legion of Doom. They're still pretty over with the fans at this point in 97. So I thought this was a good win for Rocky. I thought it was good to see him get his finisher over, the rechristened Rock Bottom. And he pins Hawk with it. So I thought that was a good win for them. A little curious because of what was to come with the Legion of Doom over the next couple weeks. But I think it's okay because they were outnumbered. And I think it's a good win for the Nation. I thought it was well-earned. A win they needed to kind of reestablish themselves and to really start to move Rocky up in the pecking order. Leading into this, he was kind of like the third, or rather fourth man, because he was the newest. And by the end of this match, and as we edge into November, he kind of becomes the assistant to Farouk, I think.
Yes, and he also, I don't know if he debuts it, but he does show off his new finisher in this match. I don't know, does it officially have a name yet? Do they actually call it what it's being called? I don't want to say it till we know for sure.
Well, I already said it, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. If not here, it was by the next month, so I think it's okay.
Yeah. So yeah, so obviously his finisher is of course the Rock Bottom, and that's a good move. It's nothing, you know. I think a lot of people give it guff over time, but yeah, it's an effective finisher.
Oh, I thought so. Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, another guy would use it. Another guy would use it that we hear on the show often. Call it something else, but it's, you know, it's effective. It's nothing fancy, and Rocky wasn't fancy at that point.
No, not at all. No,
so still, you know, it's a fine finisher. So there you go. Yeah, big win for the Nation. I think they needed it, obviously, for Rocky Maivia's purposes. For LOD, it's kind of sad, but they get a little spike a little bit later on in the month. So, all right, are you ready? I'm not going to talk. This is all you. I'm leaving this to you. If you can do it, if you can handle it.
Yeah, I can handle it. This is, of course,
leaving it to you.
Is when the news broke, Vince McMahon shows up and announces that. Actually, you know what? We were off. He actually made the announcement in the free for all. Here they go back over it again.
Okay.
So we were off during the free for all. The news broke that Brian Pillman had been found dead in his hotel room. He had wrestled the night before at a house show, and I was really upset. I was pretty heartbroken. One of my favorite wrestlers. He had just kind of been getting things going again. He had gotten back in the ring. We were just talking about how in the MSG Raw, he had that great match with Owen. He was looking kind of sprightly and moving around well again. And, you know, his heart just gave out. He had been, you know, I don't think he was a guy that did a ton of recreational drugs, but he did do a lot of pills, I think, for pain, and a lot of painkillers.
Well, yeah. I mean, his ankles were a mess.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was just hurting all the time, and he just lived a tough, tough life and fought off so many injuries and everything else that eventually his body just gave out and broke down on him, and, you know, it happened on this weekend, and it's tough because Vince hadn't really had to deal with anything like this before leading into a pay-per-view, and they should keep the show
actually
going.
It happened, technically, didn't it happen tomorrow?
Because
the show was the 5th.
Yes. So yep. So it was October 4th.
So
yep.
So it'll be what? 15 years ago tomorrow.
Yeah. Crazy. Oh, good timing on this review, I guess.
Yeah, it is, and we'll obviously put something on the on our chat page tomorrow, so everyone can do their moments. Yeah. Again, I was not as big, and I didn't dislike him, but you obviously were a much bigger fan of him than I was. And here's a guy who I remember liking him though in my early days of watching the NWA into WCW transfer 88, 89, 90. Guy was an amazing talent. Mm-hmm. It really sucks because I would say what the first what 7 years of his career, what did he debut? 88, right? Late 88, early 89?
Yeah, in Stampede. 89. Yeah.
Yeah. So you figure, okay, if you count Stampede, which I think was more like late 87. So you figure from late 87 till probably what? Late 94, early 95, he was probably one of the 10 or 15 best workers in the world.
Right.
And very underrated. In the sense that I don't think he was given as much credit in that light heavyweight realm because obviously in the early 90s, you were dealing with guys in Japan that were just off the charts, the Tiger Masks and, mm-hmm. you know, Jushin Liger and those kind of guys. Pillman was not
Jumbo Saruta,
yeah.
As you say.
Jumbo, yeah. You know, and those kind of guys. And I don't think he was given as much credit on an international level as that kind of worker. Then he joined the Blondes, and then everything changed. Because you really saw he was sugary and, you know, hey, look, it's Brian Pillman, yay. You know, and he was good, but, I mean, his personality, I think that was his problem early on. He kind of blended in with the rest of the baby faces. But when he became a Hollywood Blonde, everything changed. You saw he was just a legitimately funny guy.
No, he was great. Him and Austin together were great. And the heel turn is just what he needed to really make his mark. And, of course, that led to the Horseman run and then the work shoot that got him out of his WCW contract, sent him to ECW, and that's where he made a name for himself and built up his credibility as being a red-hot free agent. Eric Bischoff thought he was coming back, and Vince swooped in with a big money deal. And, you know, things could have really taken a turn right there, but unfortunately things spiraled out of control after that because that's when he had the car accident, drove his Hummer into a brick wall, whatever happened, he smashed his ankle up and then was just never the same after that. So, you know, a really tough night for me. I remember being pretty upset throughout the rest of the night and especially the next night as well on Raw. And, yeah, it's just sad to see a talent like him wasted right when the promotion was really about to break out and go in a direction that he would have been well-suited for, and he would have fit right in. I know we kind of mentioned that to Kevin before, so we probably won't get too much into the Brian Pillman stuff with him next week, because remember, we talked a lot about the rest of Pillman's life when we talked to him last year, so or earlier in the year, rather.
Yeah, about the year before, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, he didn't seem to think Pillman would have had much of a role in 98, which I thought was surprising, but I do think he would have had a good role. I think he could have either been... I don't want to get too far ahead of us. I think he could have played a role. Maybe we'll kind of hit on him as we go throughout 98. But, yeah, tough loss for me. I was really sad. It really caught me off guard. It really shocked me. It seemed like he was just really starting to be used. He had just come back from that injury earlier in the year. And you're like, all right, you know, Pillman's evolved. And just to see him taken away like that was terrible. But we got some good stuff from him during his time in the WWF, including that Owen match, which was one of my favorites. So.
Yeah, and honestly, JR is not doing his feelings justice. Read his comments in our column on Bigelow34.proboards.com. I was just reading it now, and you did a fantastic job pouring out your emotions in print. And you actually mentioned in those comments that awesome. We talked about it the other night in our last episode during the Raw, MSG Raw, about that awesome. Not just that match, but that awesome, you know, little segment they had with the two of them, him and Owen and Gorilla. It's just, you just don't find that anymore. There's not a lot of guys right now. There hasn't been a lot of guys in the last 15 years that have, I mean, really, if you think about it, and we won't get into it tonight, that's a long debate, but can you really find anybody over the last 15 years that have, maybe there's like five or six guys that have that good timing, that good comedic timing? There aren't many.
No.
Like those two guys, Owen and yep. Pillman, who just knew how to, and then of course you have Gorilla, who's the greatest straight man of all time.
Right,
just an awesome segment. And again, really read JR's comments on our board. It doesn't, what he's saying now is he's not even doing himself justice. No. There's a tremendous comments, and it's unfortunate. The two words I think of when I think of Brian Pillman is untapped potential. Mm-hmm. There was still so much more, even if he wasn't wrestling. Still so much more. It sucked. It really did, and it began. It was the first one, and I remember on my old show, my other radio show, a few years ago, I did a show about the run of deceased wrestlers. Somebody had just passed away. This was in 2009, and I went on a whole hour show about wrestlers that had passed mm-hmm. away, and this was the first one. You had Andre in 93, but that was different. He had already
Dino
been
retired.
Everybody knew. Well, Dino Bravo was, you know, those were not in your prime guys. I mean, like Andre's, everyone knew eventually his disease was going to catch right up to him.
Von Erich.
Kerry and Bravo were just unfortunate, just messes. I mean, obviously Bravo caught up in a whole crime syndicate thing, and Kerry was a Von Erich, so he knew his head was messed up, unfortunately. But Pillman was really the first one.
Yeah.
In your face. Mm-hmm. Like Von Erich.
In your house.
And Dino Bravo in your house and in your face while in your house. Von Erich, those you read in PWI, or they were mentioned in, you know, passing somewhere else on TV or something. There used to be a guy that did a radio show here on WFAN in New York. There was a guy, actually, it was Jody Mack, who's been on both, you know, FAN, he's on ESPN Radio. He used to do an overnight wrestling show. And on Saturday nights, he used to have a guy on, and he used to talk wrestling. And that's where I found out about Dino Bravo and Kerry Von Erich. So
I found out in the sports section of the Providence Journal. There was a little
really?
Blurb at the bottom. They have, like, you know, notable deaths. And that's where I found out about both of those.
Andre was mentioned on SportsCenter Sunday morning. I'll never forget it because it was the same day as the first Bills-Cowboys Super Bowl. I was actually in Providence. I was visiting my friend at PC. And we woke up that morning, or rolled out of bed, crashed, and woke up. And that was the first thing on SportsCenter. Andre the Giant died. And the other two I heard on this radio show. But Pillman, getting back to what we were saying, Pillman was the first one that really hit us.
Yeah.
Like you, JR. Really just came on the screen and kicked you square in the nuts. And there'll be many more like that to come, and it's quite unfortunate. But obviously, the nature of the business starts to rear its ugly head more to the forefront than it did in the 80s.
Yeah. But so in honor, I always hung my my Hollywood Blondes poster over my bed until I moved out for college the next year. So,
and I have on the wall here in Studio A, I have my classic superstars tag team figures of the Hollywood Blondes, which I believe we'll be finding a new home soon. So,
all right. So,
the place where it truly belongs. But anyway, there you go. And that happened on camera. It happened during the free-for-all, and then
Vince goes over it again after that opening match. As due to the unfortunate death of Brian Pillman, he was supposed to face Dude Love, and that match has been canceled. Dude Love was kind of acting as a surrogate for Goldust, stepping in on his behalf. And, of course, Goldust and Terry Runnels were supposed to, or Marlena, were supposed to renew their vows on the show as well. So that was also canceled, obviously. And that storyline was postponed a few weeks. So with that, Vince says we're going to have two matches to fill the time. And the first one up, we have the Minis return. Max Mini and Nova versus Tarantula and Mosaic.
Yes. And I'm going to read my comments strictly word for word on our column. I'm not grading this match. I didn't grade this match for two reasons. Number one, obviously it was the match that replaced the Pillman match. So there was no preparation. I don't think they were ready. And, you know, it was Minis. And secondly, it just every time, like I said, we're talking about it now, every time I see this match or look at it on a, it reminds me that Pillman is gone and it bugs. So I don't even bother. I didn't even grade it. It was Phil. That's all it was. It was just Phil.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There was no, yeah, exactly. It was 6 minutes, 40 seconds and just, you know, it was a replacement match. That's all it was. So, nothing really more to say other than the Minis are, you know, entertaining. They did their best. It's an impossible spot to go out and fill. So, credit to them for doing so.
Exactly. All right. Next up, we have our first title match of the evening, and it is for the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships. Your champions, the upstarts, Mosh and Thrasher, the Headbangers, taking on our man Graham Cawthon's neighbors across the street, Pig and Hog, the Godwins. And obviously the Godwins had been in a big feud with the LOD, very physical feud. We've talked about numerous matches they've had. But here the Godwins get the title shot. Which, did you find this kind of odd that...
well, they won the non-title match.
Well, that's true. Like, yeah, why don't we bring up what... you know,
well, we did. We mentioned it at One Night Only.
Yeah.
The Godwins had won the non-title match a couple weeks before. So that's how they earned this title match. Due to the assistance of Uncle Cletus, who we also mentioned at that show, was portrayed by Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony. And he is here now. He's in the house this time around. He wasn't at One Night Only with us.
Right. So yeah, even though the LOD had beaten... the guy. Do you think R. Donovan lives near Graham?
Yeah, I think they all live in one big southern house.
That's where the network show is going to be from.
Yes. House. Yes. Hick House.
Hey, Graham, I was at this show at the Baltimore Arena. Flush.
Ashley Cruz be spitting wads of tobacco on the front lawn.
Yes. That's what I find ironic. That's what I find strange, that the LOD had beaten the Godwins like three times.
I love how I have made you completely self-conscious about using that word.
Ironic.
I love how much it fucks with you now.
Yeah, now I'm totally non sequitured. I find it funny that the LOD had beaten the Godwins like three times on TV, yet the Godwins get the win and the non-title against the Headbangers. Obviously, Vince still doing the whole face heel thing. So the heel Godwins get the shot and the non-title match.
I don't know!
Well, he lives close to Graham, so he's probably owns the gym a few blocks away. So here, the Godwins get their title shot against the Headbangers, and they make the most of it, as we have brand new.
What?
Yes, World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. They were the champions, of course, in 1996 as babyfaces.
Yes.
And now they are as heels, as Phineas hits a powerbomb on Mosh a little over 12 minutes and gets the win.
Yep.
I was not crazy about this match. I thought it was a little sloppy. There was really not much chemistry. Not that good.
Kind of sad to see the Bangers only have a month-long title reign. I was hoping for a little bit longer. I thought they were good champions. The highlight maybe was on Raw. They actually fought Bret Hart and British Bulldog in a match, which I thought was kind of cool. Nothing much here. The Godwins win the titles, like you said. Some help from Uncle Cletus.
Yes.
But their title reign, as we'll see, will also be kind of short as well. But I agree. Not much going on here. The Godwins are just the Godwins. And, you know, if they're in there with a team like LOD that can go toe-to-toe and, you know, smack each other around, I think they're good. But, you know, in a match like this, I don't know if they have the offense to have guys bump around for them as much.
Exactly. And, you know, again, we're talking about two guys, Mosh and Thrasher, that are not that experienced. They're gaining experience, and they've had some, you know, good title defenses to grow their experience. But here it just was not in the cards. It was a little tough. But
did you think the show still seems out of sorts at this point? I know it would get worse as we move along, but
yeah. Well, the match being eliminated, and I think it threw the formatics of the show all.
Right, I just mean the feel and the guys in the ring. Do you think everything just kind of seems out of sync?
Yes, I do, because this has never happened before. You know, again, Andre the Giant died, but we weren't in the middle of a pay per view. It happened in a weekend, and you know the other guys were out of the business.
Will you stop?
Then there's his son. Unfortunately, as our man Bruno Lauer talked
about. Well, they waited a month to talk about that.
Well, so there's another example. But this is different. I mean, I'm sure guys didn't know until they got to the arena. So, you know, obviously 2 years later, we'd have something completely different and even worse. But I'm sure they were a little out of sorts. I'm sure, you know, there's some other guys we'll talk about later that were very close to Brian.
Yes.
You know who I'm talking about, who weren't even wrestling, that were probably a freaking disaster emotionally.
Yep.
Just as bad as you. So, probably worse. I'm sure the guys were a little, you know, kind of discombobulated for emotional reasons, and I think for formatics reasons. I think the timing of everything backstage, I'm sure things were a little kooky, a little haywire. I wonder if there was a disadvantage. What do you think about this, JR? A disadvantage of Vince being at the commentary table when shit like this happens and he's not able to focus on kind of reorganizing things. Do you think he had faith in his guys in the back?
Yeah, I think so.
Vince is very possessive like that.
Well, don't forget, Gorilla was still around, so I'm sure he was in the Gorilla position. And I think he still had his guard in place at this point well enough. You know, I'm sure he had Patterson back there doing things. I think he knew he could trust them to get things done. Right. But it's no surprise that it was around this time he transitions off the booth and back backstage. So.
Right, yeah. So there you go. The Godwins are your new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions in a less than stellar match. Not great. Next up, they show a vignette of all of the guys, the veritable buffet, and not exactly the one that Mr. Belding has been noshing on, but the buffet of Steve Austin stunners over the past, 6 or 7 weeks. Obviously, it started with JR, Jim Ross, not you. At Ground Zero, then we had
Sergeant Slaughter the next night, Jerry Lawler the week after, and then Vince McMahon, of course, on the 22nd from MSG.
Yeah. How do you think he was? I bet you he was just a mess.
Yeah, and you can tell as he comes out here. We'll get to that in a second, though. A video I thought did a good job summing up the development of Austin over the last few weeks. I thought it really put over how he's been staying in the spotlight despite the injury and really started to push along that character that you can't trust him. He's kind of a wild card, a live wire. He'll do anything he wants. They follow that up with a tribute to the legends of St. Louis wrestling. I'm guessing this was scheduled. I don't think this was a fill-in segment. I think they were supposed to do this. Gene Kaniski.
They're all there.
Gene Kaniski, Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., Harley Race, Lou Thesz, and Sam Mushnick. Mushnick, of course, was not alive, but they honor him anyway. Kind of interesting how Vince is really starting to open up the history books a little bit and recognize other promotions and history in general, something he hadn't really done before the last couple of months. So I thought that was interesting.
And the fact that he actually mentions the NWA, which he
yes.
hardly ever done. He'll do more of that in the following year. But obviously, they're not all from St. Louis. They just wrestled in the area. Obviously, Gene Kaniski is Canadian. Jack Briscoe's from Oklahoma. Dory, obviously, Texas. Mm-hmm. Harley's from the area. I think Harley Race and Luthez were the only two that are actually from the area.
Right.
But obviously, in that hotbed of wrestling, of course, Sam Mushnick, one of the original creators of the National Wrestling Alliance. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, it was very cool. I concur with you. It was good that he was embracing history a little bit. He would really, really delve into it for a few more years. But
right.
It was nice to get a nice taste here for the old school fans.
And, yep.
You know why? It's almost something his dad would have done. It was almost like something he pulled out of his dad's playbook.
Mm.
I think his dad, if this was like a house show or a big time show, his dad probably would have done that too.
And a little bit, you're going to wonder with Vince if, you know, how much of it was just, I don't know how much this was advertised locally. So I kind of wonder you know, it was used as a draw, basically.
I'm sure it was. But again, I'm also saying I think that's why Vince Sr. probably would have done the same thing. I'm saying it's something that I feel he would have done too, for the same reason, to get butts in the seats. No problem with that. Okay, back to the. I'm glad you're in a good mood. I didn't think you would be. But anyway. Next, technically, this is a title match.
Mm-hmm.
It is the finals of the tournament to crown a new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. Of course, we've had the tournament that was created when Stone Cold Steve Austin had to forfeit the title due to injury.
Yep.
JR, why don't you go over the brackets with us? How did we get to this point?
All right. In the first round, Brian Pillman defeated Dude Love. Owen Hart beat Goldust. Ken Shamrock defeated Farouk. But Shamrock, of course, as we talked about last week, was injured. So Farouk was able to re-enter the tournament, and he advanced on. Ahmed Johnson defeated Rocky Maivia. The next round, Owen Hart beat Brian Pillman in that great, great match. And Farouk defeated Ahmed. Kind of surprising. I thought for sure it would be Ahmed Owen here. Kind of odd choice to have the two heels go at it. Especially since Farouk was supposed to be eliminated anyway. So my first thought is that it was supposed to be Owen and Shamrock, I'm guessing. And then I'm guessing it was supposed to be Ahmed, but Ahmed, probably due to the hand injury, they don't want him on pay-per-views, is my guess there as well. So that's why we get this odd match of Owen and Farouk.
Right. It was, and again, another match that was kind of, because clearly here, Owen.
Yeah, Owen is a mess. Yeah.
Owen's a mess.
And then Steve Austin actually comes out for commentary, which normally would have been fantastic, but he is all over the place as well. You could tell he was definitely thrown off. You know, his best friend had just passed away. You know, he just found out about it, and here he is having to come out here and talk for 8 minutes in character. And he does well, but you could tell he's not the same Austin. You could tell he's clearly distracted.
Yeah, and he's wearing the chain. Obviously, the chain that
yes,
that he and Pillman, that Pillman bought for him when they created the Hollywood Blonde. So yeah, Austin is not there. He's not there. He may be there. He may see him, and he may be talking, but he's not there. And obviously,
right.
Owen is not there either. So this match is terrible. it's just terrible. Farouk is just a mess. I mean, I agree with you. You've been saying this for the last two or three shows. I don't know what happened to him, but it took him a little bit of time to kind of get back into the groove. Maybe it took like another year, but he's just a mess. What happened to him? I mean, since he's been here, I mean, it's been over a year now since he made his debut, and he's just bad. I don't know. It just got really big and really.
I don't know. Please no.
Yeah, please no. Don't talk to me like that. Oh, I'm really much better than that. And he just was not. And this whole match, combination of Farouk just not in his best physical state and Owen not in his best mental state, is a combination for disaster. So just another just very bad match. Bad match. Bad commentary. Stone Cold couldn't save it because he didn't even know what the hell he was saying half the time.
Right.
Just overall, just not good. Not good. How are you feeling at this point? Were you and AF and Mr. Piper there? Were you guys even into it? Or with,
yeah, really I was into the show. I mean, it was one of those things that kind of keeps creeping back to your mind. You're just kind of shell shocked. But I mean, you know, I was still so into the product and into the show in general. I mean, I can't say I was jumping up and down marking out or anything, but I was. Right.
No, I know. I'm just yeah.
It ruined the night for me in a way, but it didn't ruin my enjoyment of the show. I'll put it that way.
Okay. All right. So there you go. Owen Hart in a really god-hideous
with
match.
Help from Steve Austin.
Yeah. I can't believe that. I totally forgot about it.
He hits Farouk with the title belt, and of course that was all to set up that Austin wanted to be the one that defeated Owen to win the title, since he feels Owen had cost him the belt by breaking his neck. And Owen at this point as well was also had the Austin, the Owen 316, I just broke your neck shirt, which is just fantastic. And he still had the protective order against Austin. So a lot going on here. Oh, this has been a great feud, despite the fact that they couldn't even really be in the ring together. And I know Graham had mentioned that before when we had him on for SummerSlam, saying it's too bad they couldn't have an extended feud that involved a lot of great matches that they could have had, but just wasn't meant to be. So it looks like this feud is carrying on. Owen Hart, your new IC champion for the second time this year, and he will face off against Steve Austin soon enough, I'm sure.
And another thing that we really haven't talked about, obviously because of injury, they couldn't face each other. But Owen, you know, Steve was not happy with Owen right now. Few people weren't,
right.
Because of the whole he did the wrong type of pile driver. And it's on the Stone Cold DVD, the four disc in the documentary. Brett says he was actually upset. He asked Owen. He says, "Why were you so?" You know, he asks Owen, "Why did you have to do it that way?
Yeah.
You know, you guys had a nice plan. Why did you change it?" And Owen didn't have an answer. I think Owen was legitimately upset. I don't think he knew how to react.
No, I don't think so. I think it's someone who just didn't know better, didn't know how to handle it, and kind of just took the easy way out by just ignoring it.
Yeah, and so even if they were healthy enough to face each other, I don't know if they would have. I don't know if they could have done it in that aspect. But unfortunately, nothing bad happened. But it was just for injury reasons. They never faced each other in a full extended feud. But as my PSE has mentioned, Owen Hart, once again, World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, as he defeats Farouk in an unbelievably hideous match to finish off that tournament.
Yeah, this show so far, you know, outside of the Pillman thing, been very lackluster in the ring.
Yeah, the ring matches. And again, we keep prefacing by saying that obviously not everyone's head is probably completely in the game after, you know, the news, of course, of Brian Pillman's death. I think they're all. I think everybody's a little out of it.
No, she's just acting real funky.
Kind of sad when you're the one with the clearest head, right now. Next up, we. Oh God, this would have been bad if it was a normal night. this is even worse. We continue the unbelievably, incredibly, tremendously terrible gang wars with the DOA. The Disciples of Apocalypse taking on Boricuas, the banana split ice cream truck, taking on Chains, 8-Ball, Bob Harris, Joe Harris, all 12 Harris brothers. In another, what was it, an 8-man tag? I don't know. How many was this? A 6-man, 8-man? How many?
This one on the show is 8.
It's all 8 guys, I figured.
Yes, okay. Yep.
All 8 guys, and it's, again, it's just...
Well, this is another filler match. This was not supposed to be on the show. This is another one they put in after the Pillman passing to fill some time. So we get the minis and we get they should just let the minis have the whole
amount of space.
Yes, the whole time instead of giving this nine. So I wonder how long. Well, I guess you figure the Pillman thing and the marriage thing with Goldust and Molina.
Yeah, probably hit up a decent amount of time. Yeah, exactly.
So 9:08 here for this disaster, and the DOA gets their win back. They actually beat the Boricuas here, so that's good. A little win for
racists.
The DOA.
Racists.
Yes, right. The skinhead Aryans.
Skin Aryan bastards. By the way, we can't even say it, actually, because technically the Los Boricuas ditched the banana split ice cream truck.
Already by this point?
Yeah, they ditched the white pants, and now
they're
now
into the
like
gang wear.
Yeah, they actually legitimately look like look like Latin kings. But it doesn't make them any tougher or any better wrestlers, for that matter. This is just horrendous. Another bad match. God, it's... I'm sorry. I can't totally... we're talking about this mid-card, and I'm not being – I don't want to be mean here, but we can't totally use Brian Pillman's death as an excuse why these matches are bad. Some of them are just bad because they're bad. Again, I'm sure what happened to Brian is fucking people's heads up, but
I get no kick from Ukraine.
I think he would have been a good manager for Pillman.
He would have kept it together.
He would have, yeah. You know, even if Pillman was fine, everything was fine, this match still would have sucked. So this is one where Pillman, Brian, can't be the reason why it was bad. It's just bad. So there you go. The DOA, the Aryan skinheads, beat up the Puerto Rican gangbangers, and there you go. So in a really unbelievably bad 8-man tag. What do you think the end game was here, JR? I'm curious to hear this next week from Kevin Kelly. What was the end game? Who was going to win this? Was there actually a team that was good? Were they going to have a huge thing and somebody was going to stand tall? Did they have any idea how they were going to end this, or were they just going to fight each other forever?
I can't imagine they had too much of a plan, because I don't think it really mattered. I think they just wanted to keep the mid-card filled up, and they liked the whole gang mentality with the factions and, Yeah, I am curious what Kevin's take is, but I don't. I doubt they had some master grand plan, you know, in place for this nonsense.
Right. So there you go. DOA gets their
is DOA.
DOA is this like their first big pay per view win?
Yeah, because they lost at SummerSlam.
Yep.
And then Crush lost that awesome three way. Yes. At Ground Zero.
He should urge it. He sounded like an awesome three-way.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I didn't think so. All right. Fuck next you, up, daddy. We have a not very pumped up tag team flat match. We talked about this on the MSG Raw.
Yeah, God. Flat. Should have been a flat match, let alone a flag match.
Yeah. This is your World Wrestling Federation champion, the Hitman Bret Hart, and the former European champion, his brother-in-law, the British Bulldog, taking on the Patriot, Del Wilkes, and the Mastodon, Big Babyface Vader. Well, I'll tell you something. He was getting some pretty good face pops.
Oh, yeah.
They're definitely enveloping him.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little background here, JR. Why don't you enlighten us?
We do? Yes. Okay. Episode of Raw in August, Vader took on the Patriot. After the match, the Hardcore Nation jumped the Patriot and joined up with Vader and beating him down. Following the beating, the Harts placed a Canadian flag over Patriot. Well, that kind of pissed off Vader, who was okay with beatings and outnumbering faces. But when it came down to being foreigners involved, and you start waving those flags around, he gets a little American pride going. Gets the red, white, and blue through those big greasy veins. Gets a little bit too fired up, and that's it. We got a problem now. So Vader grabs the flag off to the Patriot, snaps it over his knee, gets him a big face pop from the crowd, and a big-time beatdown from the Harts. Vader would be a tweener over the next couple weeks. Actually even had a match with Bret on one of those Friday Night Raws in August. But by September, he'd be a full-fledged face and now would feud with the Harts until Survivor Series.
Yes. And then, of course, obviously, the British Bulldog, who did not wrestle, right? He was in the tag match at Ground Zero. Of course, Bulldog lost the European title as well. So.
Yep.
Yep. And then another... stupid Vader cutting a promo before this match. We don't know what his status was with the company. I'm sure he was not very high in the office's, he wasn't going to win Employee of the Month. That's for sure. And then he lowers even further himself down the list when he was cutting a promo, live promo before this match. He for some reason just goes off the rails and says bullshit. So. He was probably a mess, too, after what happened to Brian Pillman. So, I mean, it's par for the course, I guess, for the show, right?
Yeah, just to seem like nothing was going right.
Nothing was going right.
This is actually Patriot's last pay-per-view match as well. He's supposed to be at Survivor Series, but he tears his bicep, and it actually ended up ending his career.
Oof, that sucks.
So, yeah, he would sell the Patriot gimmick to Tom Brandy, I believe, and Brandy would work the independents throughout the rest of the late 90s into the 2000s under the Patriot name. But okay. Del Wilkes' career ends here.
Yes, that's unfortunate. Tom Brandy, one of our favorite, he of course has one of our favorite other characters. Talk more about him as time progresses as well. Yeah, this match is, again, two more guys, Bret and Bulldog, who obviously are not all there either. I mean, they're probably the two of all this crew, and this is not a knock on Owen or anything, but Bret and Bulldog, obviously the two biggest pros that could probably cover themselves here. I'm sure right. They were very upset, but I mean, they've been around the block enough to you know, help themselves in this situation. So I don't think they were, I think they were okay. But the match is just, I mean, 21 minutes and it's okay. But the problem is like we talked about on our last episode about when we're doing the Raw at MSG, not all these guys, but Bret just lost in the shuffle. We had said that he seemed out of place on that Raw at MSG and, you know, this match isn't even mentioned.
Right.
When talking about the Bad Blood card. You know, this is your World Wrestling Federation champion. And not even mentioned.
Forgotten. Yeah, the match was barely talked about. Had a little bit of builds on the other weeks other than the one we watched. But yeah, just kind of forgotten here. Non-title match and just kind of blah. There's not much going on here. As over as, you know, Vader was and as much heat as Bret had. Just kind of flat, and they go 21 minutes, which is a long match. Oof. I know they had to fill some time, and this card to this point has just not been great at all. No. Just hurting here, and this match just kind of goes on and on and on and on, and Bret finally gets the win, pinning Patriot with a roll-up. So Patriot's he officially dead in the water at this point, and he really, you know, if it wasn't for the injury, I don't know how much longer he would have lasted anyway, honestly.
No. Well, obviously the way that the product was changing, I'm sure he wouldn't have stuck around anyway.
Maybe would have went heel or something.
Yeah, maybe. Well, there was a Dark Patriot in World Class, so
Global,
he could have in Global. Yeah, so he could have done the same thing. All right, so there you go. The Hitman, your World Wrestling Federation champion, not even defending his title at this show. He and the Bulldog defeat the Patriot and Vader.
Hey, BTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
Hey, Scott Criscola, you big, stupid, sloppy fucking cunt. What are you doing over there, huh? Pick up the pace a little bit. I'm tired of you and your Cowboys. You know how much money I had riding on them last Monday night, you prick?
Sorry, VKM.
Yeah, you better be sorry, you sloppy bastard. Jim Duggan, that fucking asshole, finally returned to Orlando, Florida, October 9, 1997, defeated Frankie Lancaster. Isn't that Kokaboo ears burned? What the fuck is he doing wrestling Jim Duggan in WCW? Frankie Lancaster, go clean my friggin' car so I can go take a ride. I gotta drive up and down 95 picking up burgers at fucking Five Guys, eating them out and shitting them on the side of the road for bums to eat afterwards. Fuck you, Criscola. VKM out. Suck it, bitch.
Sure, Five Guys is pleased they got an endorsement.
As you can, apparently a big fan.
There you go, exactly. The bums can eat the leftovers. They're not even leftovers. Oh, God. Whatever. Ugh. Okay. All right. To our main event. Is anything going to save this show, JR? Anything?
We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah. Here we go. The main event. Number one contenders match. The winner of this match will get a World Wrestling Federation championship match. And it has been an awesome feud with some great promos and a lot of, you know, chaotic, awesome beatdowns. But this is the capper. The Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
The Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
And the Phenom.
The Phenom, the Undertaker.
Former World Wrestling Federation champion. Of course, we all know what Shawn did at SummerSlam. We all know what chaotic, just awesome, high-grade mess they threw together at Ground Zero. But now, we have the end. Well, I guess they thought it was the end. As these two would not have a regular match, and as we know for the old school days of wrestling, JR, all feuds end inside of a steel cage.
Mm-hmm.
But just a steel cage. We just had a steel cage match 2 months earlier at SummerSlam. That wasn't going to fly here.
No.
So, they constructed, to this day, my favorite gimmick of all time.
And it was the night after Ground Zero when they revealed this gimmick. And I remember sitting there, I was watching Raw, Josh was over. I remember just being like, what? You know, as they're describing it, because it was very similar to the cage WCW had used for different gimmicks. So, it was really cool to hear. And it was like, wow, that you know, that's something I want to see. You know, they sold me and Josh and everyone else immediately. With that announcement. So, you know, nowhere to run for Shawn. And, of course, as we talked about on the MSG Raw, this was for the number one contender slot for the world title for Survivor Series. So the winner would face Bret Hart.
Yes. And, of course, we are talking about Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
The Cell is a cage, but not the blue barred cage we've been accustomed to. And the blue barred cage will see its end soon.
Mm-hmm.
But it is back to the old school NWA, early WWF grizzled mesh, flesh ripping cage.
Oh, yeah.
But not just around the ring.
Mm-mm.
And this one had a roof, but it encapsulated the entire ringside area,
yep.
All the way out the back of the padding, you know, the padded floor, right up to the barricade, and there was a roof. And this thing was massive. Now, I've seen two throughout history. I would end up seeing two of these. You would end up seeing, of course, one yourself with me. They would change over time, but this one just looked so fucking big.
Yeah, just out of nowhere. Something you just didn't really expect. And it's just like that first image of that cage – And then Undertaker just coming out slowly and Shawn standing there and just, yeah, crazy. And now, you know, he's got his click with him, Rude, Hunter Helmsley, China. And they had really started to assert themselves as punks and, you know, pains in the asses. They had, you know, roughed up Michael Cole earlier in the night and roughed up different guys and you know, talked shit. And they didn't care. You know, they didn't hold back on anything. They let loose. And they were really starting to change the overall attitude of the promotion, the overall look of the promotion. And this cage kind of ushers that all in. And this match, you know, phenomenal. Top notch. About as perfect as a main event as you're going to get. The blood, Undertaker just beats the piss out of Shawn Michaels pretty much for 27 of the 29 minutes. This is him beating the crap out of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, this is in essence a legitimate glorified squash. I think Shawn got maybe four punches in somewhere in this match.
Yeah.
Undertaker absolutely assassinates him in this match.
I mean, and he is bleeding buckets. And at one point, they take out the cameraman. So they have to open the door to take the cameraman out. When they do, the Taker and Shawn fight their way out. They end up on the roof, and that's where Taker knocks Shawn off the edge of the roof where he's hanging on, and he falls through a table, and just a crazy, crazy spot, one that I remember rewatching millions of times. Yeah. Crowd is going bonkers. Undertaker is beating the piss out of Shawn, just beating him bloody and, you know, mercilessly, and Shawn is pinballing all over the place for him. And back in the ring, Taker grabs a chair and just cracks him. With a nasty, nasty chair shot.
Yeah, this isn't a soft.
No.
Chair shot.
It was definitely a receipt. It was definitely a receipt for the ones that Shawn had cracked him with on Raw a few weeks earlier, back in September. And forget it. So Taker cracks him with that chair, and it looks like he's going to advance on to Survivor Series, and that is when.
That's gotta be Kane. That's gotta be Kane.
The lights go off. The familiar music fires up, and out comes Paul Bearer. With a man jacked, juiced up, wearing a red and black bodysuit with a mask on. Nobody knows what's going on. Vince and JR, that's a big man. We don't know who he is. No one knew what to expect as they amble their way down to the ringside. And Vince immediately picks up on it, saying because he's with Paul Bearer, that's got to be Kane. Kane has arrived. We've heard months and weeks and months and months and months of Paul Bearer, you know, building this up. And this storyline started back in April. And here it is. We finally get the reveal of Undertaker's brother that he thought was dead so many years ago. Kane rips the door off the cage, Suburban Commando style. Rips it right off, enters the cage. Taker's a shocked. Kane throws his hands in the air, and Pyro shoots up, and Taker's surprised. Kane whacks him. I believe he hits him with a chair, right? And then the tombstone?
Yeah. Okay.
So he hits him with a tombstone, and one of the weakest looking tombstones you'll ever see. And then Taker lays down. Shawn Michaels drags his bloody carcass, and I believe he got some help, right? Did Helmsley
He crawls on his own.
Okay.
He crawled on his own. I mean, let's be honest. Shawn was about a pint away from death. I mean, there really wasn't much left in his body.
No way. So, yeah, he gets dragged over, or he drags himself over, covers Undertaker, and gets the win to advance on to Survivor Series to challenge Bret Hart. Now, I've come under fire quite a bit for this, Scott, because in my written review, I gave this match a 4.5 instead of a 5. Yep. My argument was that the ending, while as awesome as it was with Kane and to see Kane, the ending itself, it just kills me that Shawn took all this beating, all this violence, all this blood loss, and he doesn't lose. Taker loses to a job to a weak-ass tombstone. It's like, what is the rationale for him not being able to move for like 2 minutes after this tombstone, allowing Shawn to crawl over him? He doesn't hit him with a chair. I was wrong. He does not hit him with a chair. He just tombstones him.
Okay.
I wish he did hit him with a chair or just something more vicious than what happens. Like, to me, it just takes me out of it just a little bit. And I can't even say 4.5. It's more like 4 8/10 or so. It's so close to the perfect match, but the ending just pisses me off. I don't know why. I like the Kane reveal. I'm fine with all that. I just wish he did something more vicious to make it. To me, it's just not believable that Shawn could get his ass kicked so bad for a half hour, be bleeding buckets on the verge of death, and gets the win when Taker jobs to a weak-looking tombstone. That's all.
Well, it's funny you say that, JR, because I always have this conversation with our friend Johnny Reckless about the Steamboat Savage match at WrestleMania 3. Everybody says that's 5 stars, but he thinks all the George Steele stuff at the end kind of kills the perfect rating for him. So you're not alone in that in people that. Blindly or not blindly. I mean, I gave it 5 stars. The ending doesn't bug me. But who say that there's perfect matches, even when there's something that may be illogical or maybe annoying in it. And again, John has the same thing that you say, that the whole, you know, George Steele involvement at the end of Steamboat Savage kind of kills it from being five stars. So you're not alone in thinking that way about a match like this. It doesn't bother me. I understand why it bothers you. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't really care. It doesn't faze me. But you definitely have a point here that this isn't like, if this was a back and forth match where Shawn and Taker are just going at each other like crazy, fine. But come on, let's be honest. Watch the match. It's on a crap load of DVDs.
Right.
I know it's on Taker's DVD. On the Tombstone one.
I don't want to say though. Like I said, the ending, his involvement doesn't ruin it for me. Just the way they finish it ruins it for me. You know, I wish, even if he didn't hit him with a chair, even if, like, he distracted him and Rude came in and pasted Taker, just something, you know, just something more vicious, that's all.
Right.
It just, to me, is just kind of weak, that's all.
Yeah. Obviously, isn't it amazing that in what would probably, he was coming up on the end of his final pay-per-view as a play-by-play announcer, Vince McMahon nails one of his greatest lines.
Oh, yeah, and puts it over, you know, immediately.
Big time. Obviously, the other line that he'll always be remembered for is the boyhood dream has come true for Shawn Michaels, and that was, of course, at the end of WrestleMania 12. This one is up there, too. You know, that's got to be Kane!
That's got to be Kane!
Yeah, it's awesome. Vince, and let's mention it now, because we won't bring it up again. It won't come up again soon. Or again, really. As much as I give Vince a lot of guff for his kind of vanilla, sugary, kind of play-by-play at times, when he needed to, he could deliver. He's no gorilla, and he knows he's no gorilla.
Right.
And he won't be JR, who, as we'll see, will, you know, mm-hmm. hit the seat and run with it. But when Vince needed to step up at a big moment in the chair on the stick,
mm-hmm.
Vince knew what to do.
Yep.
He knew how to deliver it. So I will give VKM, as much as he just called me a myriad of bad names,
yes.
I will say that he does go down as a classic play-by-play guy. He definitely is not gorilla. But you know what did it for me, JR, in terms of my respect for Vince as a play-by-play guy? When we watched One Night Only, I really enjoyed listening to him that night, because that was like we talked about. That reminded me a lot of a house show where they were kind of in a comfort zone. It wasn't it wasn't a lot of American audience.
Yeah, right.
Acting a little differently. Yeah. And he really did a nice job of putting, you said it perfectly. He was a pitch man that night.
Yeah. Well, Vince, you know? I mean, you know, we've talked about Vince during his time in the late 70s, and excuse me for one second. Okay, just had a violent cough come out. In the late 70s and early 80s, you know, Vince was a very good play-by-play man. He was very, you know, subdued and got the match across. And then he almost returns to that a little bit in late 97. And I am a little sad to see him go in the booth. But, you know, it's time for Jim Ross to finally step up and kind of take over the reins. But, Vince knows. The thing with Vince is he knows what he wants to get over, so he knows how to do it. And he's been masterful on the mic throughout 1997. We saw it at WrestleMania, putting over the Austin Brett double turn. And ever since then, through that whole feud, he's just been great. So there you have it. So Shawn Michaels moves on to Survivor Series. Kane is now a character on WWF television. We'll see how Undertaker reacts and what Kane does in the weeks to come. You know, the definition of a one-match show, Scott, the rest of the show is just dreadful. This main event
it
is
really
phenomenal.
Is. Yeah, it is.
So, you know, a tough show. It's hard to blame them because so much must have been going on backstage, so much chaos, and so many guys were so close to Brian Pillman that it must have been really, really hard. So, a weird show. You know, you want to give it an A for historical importance, probably, but a C, C minus D for the actual show. But it's one worth checking out. Very dark overtone to it, besides Pillman's death. Just a weird feel to it anyway. Those October shows usually did, but this one, for some reason, had an odd feel to it.
Well, we're on the fast track now to probably what was, you know, we're going down a very slippery slope, product wise, business wise. We're in dangerous waters here, and you know, there's a lot of shit going on in more ways than one. So, yes. There was a lot of dark overtones on camera, and obviously there were a lot of dark overtones off camera.
Yep.
And I think that all of that was, and then obviously Pillman's death doesn't help matter. So there's a lot of shit going on. A lot of shit going on. But yeah, this show is just is a mess. Thank God for the main event. This might have been this could have been a borderline F if this match screwed the pooch. It does not. I gave it a C. You gave the show itself a C, but you, for historical significance, of course, you gave it an A, and I agree with that. For a lot of reasons, obviously Pillman's death, the cell, Vince's last pay-per-view. We can't stress not ignoring that, because it is a big moment in history. Because now we're about to begin, the modern day Gorilla Jesse, and we'll obviously get to that over the next few shows. But yeah, we can't sugarcoat it now, JR. We're entering a very foreboding time in the World Wrestling Federation. It's not fun, and obviously next week,
right?
Because obviously we have to see how the schedule is going to go now. But our next show, our next vault is going to be
interesting.
Yeah, in many ways, and of course we'll have. We'll have our good friend Mr. Forchetti joining us during that. But if you've never seen the show, just find the cell.
Yeah,
it's just really it. Don't worry about the rest. Just find the cell. It's on Tombstone, which is Taker's DVD. It's got to be on one of Sean's. I don't have my Journey in here right now. I don't. It's not on the Heartbreak and Triumph. It's on something else. Check our man Graham's site, thehistoryofwwe.com. He always lists what comps, what compilations it's on. It's definitely on his Tombstone, Taker's Tombstone DVD. By the way, that and the Ground Zero, they both are back to back. They were smart to do that.
All right, so that is your Bad Blood review. Unfortunately, no feedback tonight. Due to the change in schedule, this was a last minute thing that we're going to review this tonight. So we didn't get a chance to get the thread up, and we apologize for that. So Bad Blood is in the books. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's time for our Week 5. NFL preview. Because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Yes, WrestleChat.net, indeed, your home for everything in pro wrestling. All the news and notes you need from WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. They have a great message board. Check out their podcast, The Champ, Jeff Beck, and his announcer. And of course, while you're perusing the site, you look to the right, you see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go to our full archive, courtesy of our good friends at Podbean. That is WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Also, don't forget the history of WWE.com, our friend Grant Cawthon. Outstanding research site, ring results, DVD reviews, everything you need is there. Also, check out our show on Stitcher.com. If you have iPhone, Android, any kind of phone or any kind of player, tablet, go to it. You can listen to our shows anytime. And then, of course, also on iTunes. And, of course, check out our message board, Bigelow34.proboards.com. We're always talking wrestling, sports, anything you want. Check out JR's and my reviews. We talk Raw, SmackDown, all sorts of stuff. And don't forget to help out our friend Jay Womet. Still dealing with a lot of physical issues with his leg and a touch of skin cancer, but he's a fighter, and he's a great fan of the show. And if you want to help him, check the link on our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, and you can help him out. He's a great guy.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, this is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be Podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
All right, Nation, we are back, and it is time for week 5 already, Scott. Can you believe it?
Oof, crazy. It's been a bonkers month, let me tell you, JR, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. So let's go through the based on our free and fun only PTB. Which team are you? I always forget. Which team are you again?
Shoddy doesn't know.
Shoddy doesn't know. You have taken a 2-point lead on me, 38-36. I had a horrendous week last week.
So. Yeah, I did okay.
And in the PTB extra points, you have taken the lead as well. We both got our locks, the Patriots and the Falcons. You got your upset, the Vikings. I didn't, and we know who I picked. We won't go there. and then we both got our suicides wrong. The Raiders lost and the Seahawks lost. So right now, you have 0 points, and I have -2 points.
So it's a very exciting contest.
Yeah, it's super scoring. Stellar. Exactly. All right, are you ready?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
Let's dive right in.
Let's do it.
Let's take the field.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll begin with the Thursday night game, and I'm diving right in with my quick upset.
Oof.
Let's go to the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis, where the Rams will host the Arizona Cardinals. We're playing very well. But I think this is their week to get beat. I'm taking the Rams at home.
You summon a bitch. That's what I was going to take.
I knew you were going to, too. I knew you were going to take them, too. I think they're due for a big – obviously, they won last week against a good Seattle team. They're not a bad team. They got their holes, but Bradford's a solid quarterback. Defense has been much better than I think people thought. Jeff Fisher is getting these guys believing the field, you know, believing the hype – and not the hype, but believing his philosophy and believing in him. And Arizona is one of those 4-0 teams that have played good, but we know talent-wise, you know, if they have a bad day, they'll lose. So I like the Rams at home.
Me too. I'm taking the Rams as my upset.
Okay. So there we go. So we both have the Rams in our upset. Okay. Let us go now to the Sunday games. By the way, there are 4 byes this week. Let's dive into that. The Cowboys, who played like they had a bye this week.
Yes.
The back-to-back Lions. Buys. Back-to-back byes. And we're not going to go on a Romo rant, but I'm not upset at him again. He made a couple bad throws.
Joe Theismann's upset with him. He took his crooked, broken leg and waved it at him.
Yeah. The Lions are off, although they feel like they're playing off every week, too. Mm-hmm. Oakland is off, and Tampa Bay is off this week.
Just want to give a quick shout-out to PTB Nation member Justin Pratt, big Bears fan, wants to rub it in your stupid old ugly face that the Cowgirls got whipped, got eaten alive by the Bears.
Bear defense was awesome.
Yeah.
But there's issues right now with the receiving core. Guys are communicating with each other. Dez Bryant is an immense physical specimen.
He's a disaster.
He doesn't have the NFL receiving instincts.
Oh, God, he's terrible.
And he needs to. And Ogletree is overrated. He had one good game against the Giants. He's done jack shit since. The only wide receiver right now that's got his head clear out of his ass is Miles Austin.
And that's until his hamstring rips.
Until some muscle pops. But a lot of kudos to the Bear defense. They are relentless. They're hungry. The Cowboy defense played fine as well. I mean, mm-hmm. 14 of those 34 points were pick sixes.
Yep.
So it was just a bad game all around for the Cowboy offense. Anyway, we don't have to talk about them anymore. All right, let's go to Sunday's games. We have, 6-1 o'clocks, 5-4 o'clocks, and then, of course, the NBC night game and the Monday night game. Mm. All right, we'll begin at Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, where the Bengals, who had a good, nice win last week, host the Miami Dolphins, who, it's kind of funny, JR, they played good.
Yes.
But not good enough to win. Tannehill had his first real solid game as a quarterback. Back-to-back overtime losses.
Yeah, I mean, they have a good shot, really, where they could be 3-1 instead of 1-3. They probably should have beaten the Jets. And, they should have beaten the Cardinals. They sacked Cobb 8 times. So their defense was pretty good, and I was tempted to take them here. I just think Cincinnati is a little more fundamentally sound at home. If this is in Miami, I'd be really tempted, but Miami's tricky. Like, you know, if they were point spreads involved or something, I'd really look at it. But I don't think straight up Miami's going to win the game. But I think they'll give them another fight, another week with a fight.
I concur. I like the Bengals as well, but Miami will. Their defense really hasn't been that bad. They played very, very solid. And Tannehill comes, you know, he's got nothing to lose. Most of these skill guys on the Dolphins' offense have nothing to lose. They're just going out and playing hard, and they're getting some, you know, some push, but just not enough to get over the hump. And I think Andy Dalton have another solid game, and the Bengals win. But it'll be a close game. All right, next, let's go to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where Andrew Luck and the Colts will host the Green Bay Packers. This is my lock. And everyone's going to think, oh my God, what a crazy upset. No, not going to happen. The Packers need to, you know, they need to, after a bad, you know, an ugly, not their fault loss on Monday night, and then a game that they probably should have won by more, even though the Saints played tough. This is a woodshed game, I think, for the Packers. They're going to go into Indianapolis, and I think they're going to whump the Colts.
Well, they need it to, because they need to prove they're still a good team. Something that's kind of been out to lunch a little bit the last few weeks. But I don't think it's the lock that you're saying it is. I think I wouldn't be shocked if Indy somehow pulled off an upset. I don't think they will, but I wouldn't mark this down as a lock by any means.
Well, I think it'd be a bad loss if the Colts.
Oh, it'd be a terrible loss, but maybe it'll be proof that maybe Green Bay's windows, not closed, but shut.
Well, let's put it this way: the window's closing for them with this team. Maybe they need to make some different changes around Rodgers. But obviously, his window's not closing. He's still got a lot of good years left. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, where the Chiefs will host the Baltimore Ravens, who looked solid Thursday night in a win over the Browns. Nice fun fact here for you, JR. Joe Flacco 9-0 in his career against the Brownies. So there you go. Taking on the Chiefs. You know how you were talking about how Baltimore like falls into pits in games like this? I don't know if you're thinking that here. I'm not. I'm going to take the Ravens, but yeah, this game could give you a bugaboo if you think about historically bad Raven road losses.
Yeah, well, you think back last year to that terrible loss at Jacksonville last year early in the season. But Kansas City is just awful. And, you know, they beat New Orleans, but it took a, you know, monumental running performance by Jamaal Charles to do it. Other than that, they've looked terrible. And this may be the end of Matt Castle as starting quarterback. He may be out after this game anyway. So I think Baltimore goes in there, takes care of business, and moves on to what, 4-1 they'll be? 4-1.
Yeah, I think they'll be 4-1. Yep, 4-1. And I agree with you. I like the Ravens too. All right, next, let's go to FedEx Field in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where the Redskins will host the Atlanta Falcons, another unbeaten. This game's not going to be as close as people think. I think the Falcon defense is going to wrap up Robert Griffin III. He did not play well at home in his one home game, and I think the struggles will continue a little bit for him. He's putting up some numbers, but he's just not, you know, he's too young to be able to will games on his own. So I'm going to take the Falcons. They're playing just so fundamentally sound right now in every facet. The offense is running smooth. They got both receivers, Julio Jones and Roddy White, playing fantastic right now. The defense is playing well. They're hitting the quarterback. They're making third down stops. I like the Falcons. This is another game where people are like, oh my God, Robert Griffin. I don't think so.
Atlanta did look a little shaky last week. They had a tough matchup with Carolina, and really Carolina should have won that game if the asinine idea that they punted instead of going for it on fourth and short. Excuse me. That might have been a scary game that kind of waked them up. I don't see Washington beating them here. They had a hard time beating Tampa last week, and Atlanta's far superior. So I think Atlanta goes in there, and again, another team that takes care of business.
Okay. Let's go to MetLife Stadium, the Snoopy Bowl in the Meadowlands, where the New York Football Giants will host the Cleveland Browns. I was talking to a few Giant fans about this today, JR. This is one of those games, and my brother, who's, of course, a usual correspondent to our fine program, big Giant fan. He agrees. He's like that too. Giants are big road underdogs that come up with big wins. But these are the kind of games where Eli sometimes gets a little blonde.
Well, not even just him, just the whole team. Yeah. And this is, you know, that game against Miami last year that they almost blew at home. And this is the game right now. Remember, I said a couple weeks ago you haven't been paying attention if you picked against the Giants in that game against Carolina. Those are the games they win. These are the games they usually get a scare in or they lose. Again, this is another one where, you know, if we're looking at, you know, spreads or whatever, that's one maybe you look at not taking them. I think straight up, I just don't think Cleveland's got the firepower to beat them. But don't be surprised if this is a close game going into the fourth.
Yeah. If the Giant defensive front can play as good as they know they can, Whedon will have a struggle. The Brown offensive line's a little shaky. They did not look that great against Baltimore. And this Giant front seven is just as good. But the Giant secondary can be very beaten easily. So if the Browns' offensive line is focused and can give Whedon some time, he may get some yards in this game. So it'll be a big question if the Browns' offensive line can get the job done against this Giant front seven. If not, then the Giants will win this game easily. All right, next we go to the ketchup bottle, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, where the Steelers will host the Philadelphia Eagles in the Battle of the Keystone State. This is a weird game because I don't really like either team. I don't think either team's really playing that great. The Eagles have won every game by the skin of their teeth. They really haven't played a great game yet this year. They played all right against the Giants, but not nearly as good as a 3-1 team should be.
No, they've won three games by 3 points total. So
yeah, and in those three game wins, they have like 10 turnovers. Yeah. So I'm going to take the Steelers at home. This is a game they should win. Big Ben should look good. Michael Vick will struggle. The Steeler defense has had its moments, but I think they get the job done.
There are a million reasons why Pittsburgh should win this. They have 2 weeks to prepare for Andy Reid. They're rested. Ben Roethlisberger at home. Steeler defense at home. I'm not sure if Harrison and Polamalu will be back, but, you know, with 2 weeks off, you think maybe they should be. But Phillies has got something weird going on right now where they're pulling games out of their ass, all these stupid lucky breaks. Andy Reid's fucking up time, you know, missed time, all his usual bullshit timeouts and everything else, and that's not even affecting them. And I'm telling you, I think I'm going to take Philly here in the upset. I don't know why. It's just one of those magic rides. I'm just going to ride it out.
Yeah. I am too, but so you're like, so you like the Steelers? Or are you taking the Eagles?
No, I'm taking the Eagles.
You're taking the Eagles? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think they're better. I don't think they should win, but they should have won any of the games they've won so far. So
yeah, that's true.
I'm just going to kind of ride it out.
All right. All right, let's go to the 4 o'clock games. We'll start at Bank of America Stadium down in Charlotte, where the Panthers will host the Seattle Seahawks. Carolina's been very herky-jerky. Bad loss for Seattle last week. I thought they should have beaten the Rams, but the Rams obviously can't take anything away from them, as we've talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. This is a coin flip game for me, but coin flips usually mean the home team. So I'm actually going to take Carolina here. I think it'll be a close game. I think both quarterbacks, it's a great matchup of two very young quarterbacks, a lot of pure ability that still make, you know, still young, so still make mistakes. You're going to see a lot of picks in this game, I think. But I think in the end, Carolina's going to eke it out.
Me too. I'm taking Carolina here. They've looked good the last 2 weeks since the Giants debacle. They've played. Actually, was the Giants 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they bounced back well and played Atlanta tough. The only thing really fucking up Carolina is their coach and their time management and all that stuff seems to be really getting in their way.
A lot of that this year.
Yeah, but yeah, Seattle doesn't play as well on the road as they do at home. And, you know, they laid that stink bomb in St. Louis, a game that they really could have went in there and made a statement and won. So I think they stay a little shaky here. I think Russell Wilson continues to struggle, and Carolina wins. And I'm wondering how long it is before we see Matt Flynn, honestly.
I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised either. All right, let us move on to Everbank Field in Jacksonville, where the Jaguars will host the Chicago Bears. I'll tell you, I saw firsthand this Bears defense is downright vicious. Mm-hmm. They are ball hawkers. I love Briggs. I love that secondary. They played. They beat the crap out of the Cowboys. I mean, they beat the Cowboys did enough to beat themselves, drop passes and whatnot. But they are vicious, and I think they're gonna just eat up Blaine Gabbert and just rip this Jaguar offense to shreds.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm still not a big Jay Cutler fan. I really don't like him. Brandon Marshall played a good game because Brandon Carr can't cover big receivers. He's one of those tough guy kind of corners, but Brandon Marshall's a bigger guy than he is, so that kind of stuff doesn't fly. But I think the defense wins this game. As it's been so far. So I like the Bears on the road.
Me too.
Okay. Next, let us go to Mall of America Field up in Minneapolis, where the Vikings, JR, I tell you, you with a magical upset pick last week.
Well, that had written all over it. Detroit had been playing like shit. Minnesota was hot coming off that Niner win, and I had a feeling that something was going to happen, something funky. Yeah.
So this week they host the Tennessee Titans. I feel like this is a game the Vikings, you think, oh, they're playing really good, they're going to win, and then they stink out the joint. But I'm going to take the Vikings here. Chris Johnson's not running the ball well.
That's an understatement.
Tennessee defense has a lot of holes. If Christian Ponder can just not make mistakes, give the ball to Peterson, give the ball to Gerhardt, and eat up some clock, I like the Vikings in this one.
Me too. I like Minnesota here, especially with Locker out, Hasselback in. I just don't see them generating the offense to beat Minnesota. Now, Minnesota, I will say this, though, they did get a little lucky with Detroit because they had the two return touchdowns. Detroit special teams is atrocious. Yeah. So, you know, that played a little bit of a part, but, you know, that's key, too. You know, they got a guy in Percy Harvin that can return those kicks and make those plays. So, I like Minnesota here to stay hot. Tennessee, I think, is going to end up being the worst team in the league at the end of the day.
All right, let us go now to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Game of the weekend. Tom Brady and the Patriots hosting Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. Historically, Peyton Manning, this is his house of horrors. Numerous playoff games here as a Colt, pick after pick after pick. But the Patriots, yeah, they play good against Buffalo, but Buffalo's defense has been very underwhelming this year. I'm torn on this one, JR. I Denver looked really good against Oakland. I could see them coming in here and beating the Patriots, and I can also see the Patriots putting up 50. I'll give you the floor first. What do you think?
New England. I think at home. I think it's going to be a shootout, but I think New England at home takes this game. Denver's defense is not very good, and I know you're saying they beat up Buffalo, and I think Denver's is better than Buffalo, but New England comes home, and they get the win here.
Okay.
It'll be a fun game, though, and it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think both teams are going to light it up.
Like, yeah, it's going to be like watching you and our man Mr. Flanagan playing Madden. It's like a pinball machine. I think it'll be like that. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Pats. I think I'll take the Pats at home as well. But Denver will make this game close.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll see Peyton throw a bad
It'll come down to whoever's got the ball last, probably.
Yeah, and I could see Peyton throwing a bad fourth quarter.
But I'll tell you what, if it comes down to a field goal, I don't know. Because Stephen Gostkowski is melted in front of our eyes. And all of a sudden he can't hit anything. So.
Yeah. All right, next we go to Candlestick Park in San Francisco, where the 49ers will host the Buffalo Bills. Interesting game. Ryan Fitzpatrick leading the NFL in touchdown passes, but he throws the ball all over the place. He is the prototypical
AFC. I think
AFC
he leads the league in garbage time touchdown passes.
Yeah, probably. He is a master of the gunslinger throws all over the place. I like the Niners in this one. I think they're going to – the Buffalo running game is kind of a mess right now, and it wasn't, but you're dealing with two – partially injured running backs in both Jackson and Spiller. Mm-hmm. They're not getting the push on either of those guys like they did earlier in the year. And the Niners, was it last week? They had that bad, the bad loss to Minnesota. Actually, they beat the Jets. 2 weeks ago, they rebounded, actually, obviously, from the loss to the Vikings last week. I think they keep it up. I like them at home.
Me too. This is my lock of the week. I don't see any way Buffalo goes in there and wins this game.
Okay. So let me do the little document here and put SF under JR's lock. All right. And finally, finally on Sunday, we have our NBC game from the Superdome in New Orleans. I'm sorry, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, where the Saints, winless, will host the San Diego Chargers in the Breeze Bowl, current team versus former team. I'm sure they've met since he's been a Saint, but I don't know. Saints have to win eventually. And the last couple games, they haven't played that bad. San Diego, one week they look good, one week they look bad. Last week they looked good against Kansas City. Week before they looked awful against Atlanta. I don't know. What do you think? I'm leaning towards the Saints at home finally getting a win. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Saints got to get on the board here. They looked better this week against Green Bay. And San Diego is just one of those teams I think is going to be frustrating week to week. Last week they looked great. They dominated Kansas City. This week, Kansas City they played, right? And think they struggled this week a little bit, and I think New Orleans comes home, and I think the crowd will be behind them, and I think they get the win.
Okay, so I think I'm going to lean towards that, too. I think I like the Saints getting their first win as well. San Diego will give them a tough game, and if the Chargers win, I won't be surprised, but it's Drew Brees is too proud a quarterback, and this is a proud franchise that's trying to get over the hump. I think they win. I think they finally win at home in prime time. Monday night. To the Snoopy Bowl.
No music. He doesn't deserve it.
Nobody does. Before we say that, JR, I will say this. At least I have my undefeated New Haven Chargers and my undefeated Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And you have, as we can tell by the scoreboard right now, while we're doing our picks, you're about to win the American League East title. And you'll have some weeks of postseason baseball because I didn't know if there was a team that played worse than the Cowboys. And there was.
It was ugly. It was ugly from the start.
It was not fun.
I mean, they were kind of hanging in there, and then when they had that great third down or whatever, it was fourth down pass when Tebow hit that little jump pass, and that's where everything, the shit just really careened out of control and hit the fan. Pitts, whatever his name is, I don't think he's ever played a down before. He fumbles the ball. He gets chop blocked at the knees and coughs it up, and from there it was on. Santonio Holmes breaks his foot and falls down and decides to throw the ball randomly to a Niner, and they ran it back for a touchdown. It was just gross to watch. They're pinning this on Sanchez. They're saying he's no good and he's done, and I still don't know how much is really his fault. They fucked him up so bad. They change his receivers every year. Their offensive line has been a sieve, and they just don't give him I think what he needs to win. Now, that's an indictment on him as well, because by this point in his career, maybe he should be a guy that can rally these guys and step it up and win these games. But I don't know. I honestly think I didn't feel this way before the season, but now I've kind of changed my tune. I think Sanchez is down to his last start or two here. If he gets romped Monday night in Houston, I think when they face Indy next a week from Sunday, they will either have Tebow or McElroy in a quarterback. And I'm not going to be surprised if McElroy, honestly, steps in instead of Tebow. But now there's rumors that Woody Johnson is going to push them to start Tebow. So I don't know what's going on. At this point, with no receivers, with Holmes out for the year, fuck it. Put Tebow in and run the option. I don't give a shit. They're going to know what to throw to anyway. So, and you get Stephen Hill to run deep, and Tebow can throw bombs to him like he did to Demaryius Thomas, and maybe you light some kind of spark and see what happens. So at this point, they got nothing to lose. You might as well pull the trigger and do it. So I'll take the Jets because I never pick against them, but I honestly don't think they're going to win. So
I'm sorry, buddy. I got to take the Texans here. They're red hot right now. They're another team like the Falcons where nothing's going wrong, and they're facing a dead man walking team. I think the best thing for you this week.
I don't think they're dead in the water. They still have an easy schedule. I mean, they're 2-2 right now, and after this week, they have Indy, and then they get the Patriots. But then after that, they get the Rams, they get the Seahawks, the Cardinals, which, you know, it's prove that they're legit before we jump on their bandwagon completely.
Of course, I agree.
They got Jacksonville in there. They got Miami again. They got Buffalo. I mean, they have a lot of winnable games. I don't think it's out of the question that they can't get to 8 or 9 wins. And if they get some lucky breaks and maybe Tebow does step in and rally them a little bit, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm not burying them yet. You know, if they were 0-4 and had a hard schedule, I'd say forget it. But just because of their schedule right now, you know, if they lose this week on Monday and then they beat Indy, they're 3-3 going into New England. They go 3-4. And then the schedule softens, so I don't know. I still think there's a way they can get to 9 wins, and 9 wins may get them in the playoffs with the way the AFC is.
Well, I wish you luck. that might be a tall
order. I'll put it this way. I honestly think they may have a better shot than your team of getting the playoffs just because of the strength of the conference. I think the NFC is so strong. Oh, I'm just saying. I think maybe the AFC you can sneak in at 9 wins. That's all.
I'm not disagreeing with that. You're right. I don't think it's a question of which of our teams is better or worse. It's circumstances.
Just comparing.
There's better teams in the NFC.
Yeah.
It's a little more top heavy, and the Cowboys may not get a shot. And that's fine. And the way they played on Monday, why bother? You got receivers dropping passes, and it's a mess. But anyway, we'll talk about the Cowboys next week when they play the Ravens. So what a fun! And let me tell you something. I saw their schedule. They're the opposite of you. They keep playing like this. They can conceivably go like 5-11. So I don't even want to go there. But again, I'm taking the Texans. I just think they're the wrong team to play. They needed what the Jets needed what we have this week, and that's a bye. I think you needed a week off to kind of lick your wounds and then maybe regroup. But
We'll see how. Monday night under the lights, national TV against the best team in the league. It's gonna be it'll be interesting. We'll see how long if they cave, if Tebow does play at all, or what happens. So
We will see what happens. All right, so there you go. We have one more thing left. We didn't pick our suicides. Our suicide picks for this week. Just to recap, in our locks, you have the Niners, I have the Packers. We both have the Rams in our upset. So who is your suicide pick? You've already picked the Vikings, Bengals, Lions, and Seahawks.
Okay. I'm going to take the Bears.
You're going to take the Bears. Okay. I am going to take – who have I not taken yet? I've taken Tampa Bay, Houston, Detroit, and Oakland. I am going to take – I'm going to take Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh against the Eagles. So there you go.
All right, Nation.
There's your week 5 picks.
Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Bad Blood is in the book, Scott. Little unexpected, but we got it done. Got through it.
Yes. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yep, NFL week 5 in the books as well. So next week now, we will be talking to Kevin Kelly on Wednesday night, going through the year of 1997. Again, we're really looking forward to that, so hopefully it works out. And then the week after that, on Monday, we'll hit Survivor Series with Kyle Borchetti. Next Monday, no show due to Columbus Day.
Yes. And Columbus Day, and then on the 15th, as you said, Columbus. And then the following Wednesday, we have a treat for you. We're not giving it away, but you're gonna like it a lot.
Yes.
Let's put it this way: it continues our concept album of 1997. We'll just leave it at that.
And then just to update everyone in baseball, the Yankees have clinched the AL East. They're beating Boston right now, 14-2 in the eighth. But Baltimore lost 4-1 to Tampa, so that knocked them out of contention. So. Baltimore and Texas play 8:30 Friday night. No games tomorrow or on Thursday. Friday night we have 8:30 Texas at I think it might be Texas at Baltimore.
Sucks for the Rangers.
I'm not positive on that though. I'll have to double check. And then the winner of that will face the Yankees. So the Yankees have to travel to either Baltimore or Texas to open up that series. That starts on Sunday. Detroit and Oakland starts in Detroit on Saturday.
Yeah, just so no one gets confused. The playoffs in terms of schedule a little goofed up this year because they added that second wild card at the last minute. So the division series layout is like it was back in 1995.
Yes.
The team without the home field gets the first two games,
right,
and then the team with the home field gets the last three. So if you're a Yankee fan, you're wondering what the hell they got to go on the road for. They're only going on the road for the first two games, and then they will be in the Bronx the last, well, at most three. So. Which might stretch out these series because, you know, the whole team, you know, maybe might get an edge, but we'll see.
Yes, we will see. So That's that. And then in the NL, we have Washington awaiting the winner of Atlanta and St. Louis. Jay Hinchy could be a big week for him. And then we will see Cincinnati and San Fran starts off on Saturday as well. So a lot of great teams involved this year, some different teams. So it should be a lot of fun as the playoffs move along. We'll see what happens. So we'll talk more about that headlines in a couple weeks, Scott, as we lead into the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. So all right, let's wrap things up. Everyone have a great holiday weekend. Have a disease-free, safe Columbus Day. And go out and discover your own country, I'd say.
Rest in peace, Brent.
Yes. Okay, well, that was an odd dichotomy. I was just kind of making a stupid joke, and you take it in a totally different direction. Well, you can discover someone else's inhabited country if you want as well.
Yes.
So. All right, that's Scott. I'm Justin. Have a good holiday. We'll talk to you next Wednesday with Kevin Kelly. Take care.
Taking Sweden.
What? Sweden? Oh, you can't fuck with the Swedes.
Lord knows that I'm not you, and if I was, I wouldn't be so cruel, because waiting on love ain't so easy to do. Must I always be waiting, waiting on you? Must I?